Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to episode 114 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. We are coming to you on the Blue Jays off day, and the dominant story surrounding the team these days is, whether you call them this or not, the Buffalo Boys. And despite the fact they're all older than Vladdy, I believe. I think all of them except for Schneider would be older than Bichette as well. So boys is a bit of a, it's iffy terminology here, but what is your impression of what these guys can do down the stretch? Because clearly what they've done so far has been excellent. And where are we going with this sort of ragtag bunch? Is it just a fill-in brigade, or are we looking at some guys of interest further down the line? Because we talked a little bit about Schneider last week, but these other guys as well.
Yeah, it's been a really obviously interesting run that they've had. I hesitate to call them the Buffalo backup quarterback syndrome boys, but there's an element of that to it, I think. But also, I remember the way we talked about Whit Merrifield at the start of the season, where it was just like, I don't think this is going to last, but you got to ride the hot hand while you can. And that was kind of how some of those positions that the Blue Jays had, had set up, were supposed to function. Whoever has the hot hand, if they have the versatility to kind of find a spot in the lineup that makes sense, it doesn't have to be the same place every day, they should get the run. And these guys have proved something, right? And I think that there are reasons to think that some of it could be real. Ernie Clement made a change. He's the elder states, but he's barely a boy. He's closer to my age than Vlad's, practically. Not true, but he did something meaningful in his approach that has really unlocked his results. And I was skeptical because of the low walk totals and strikeout totals in Buffalo, because of the way that the robot umpires, the ABS system, has perhaps aided players in the International League. And, there's a huge amount of context that you need to take those numbers with. I think the Bison's offense as a whole is like middle of the pack in that AAA league. So it's kind of, that's why that backup quarterback syndrome thing is in my back pocket. But, credit to them for what they've done. Horvitz has looked like a guy who could contribute at the big league level. And I think we always kind of, maybe thought that. It's just his production doesn't, fit the natural shape of a first baseman. I think I mentioned like he looks like a Rays guy at some point earlier in the year, because that they they don't really necessarily care about round pegs or square holes. And another guy where you got to keep putting him out there, which is something that is infuriating people when they're not seeing them in the lineup. And you can understand why.
I mean, the lineup the team ran out on Wednesday, for instance, was pretty remarkable in how bad it was. And I'm not, I know you're facing a lefty, so you're not necessarily going to see Horwitz out there, and, Belt's not available. And there are mitigating factors there, obviously, but I remember having a little bit of shell shock just looking at at that lineup. Part of the problem of which is having Whit Merrifield just smack there in the middle of it. Because he's just not been good recently and isn't really particularly good overall. And, he had his run of home runs and he had his good start, but he is who he is. And just seeing him clean up a bit wild, but that's neither here nor there. I think that these guys need to be evaluated on sort of a case-by-case basis. Like, it's easy to lump them in as this one unit of, you know, because they're all playing well. They've all gotten the call-ups around the same time of year. They're all playing a big role in kind of lifting this team up, or at least holding this team up during an important stretch. With Schneider, like, I mean, you're really kind of on to something. Like, the degree to which he's been dominant at the plate is just so hard to do that you have to take not that level seriously, but the idea that he can be a real contributor, you have to take that seriously. Like, you're looking at his rest of season projections and you're going down fan graphs. It's like WRC plus 114, 112, 113, 100, 103. Like, this is a guy who I think we have to think of as at least a decent hitter at this point. No one is the guy he's been, but decent. Horwitz and Clement are a little tougher to sell me on. You're right about Horwitz. A lot of the issue there is just the idea that he doesn't fit our conceptions of what a first baseman should be. But those conceptions aren't based on nothing, right? Like, it's based on the fact that being a first baseman or first baseman slash part-time outfielder slash DH, like, the bar is pretty damn high to be a useful player because those positions are very easy to fill defensively. It's very easy to get a veteran to play one of those roles, right? Like, I think a lot of people are penciling Horwitz into some kind of role for the team next year, and it's easy for me to envision them just being like, oh no, let's just pay someone like a little bit of money to do that instead of going with the unproven guy who will have, I don't know, 20 games to his name by the time next year rolls around.
I think that's true. You know, if you're looking forward to next year, then Schneider has definitely proven it for longer and feels like more of a guy. Still, I would not hand him the keys to third base and then not have, you know, a contingency plan that was pretty strong in place, you know, because I don't, you know, we haven't seen that much of him. But you do feel good about everything you've seen from him, you know, obviously. Horwitz, yeah, you know, I'd knock him for not having any power, but apparently nobody on this team does, which is absurd. Also, apparently at home is where it's really been the worst. I've seen tweets about that, and that's been something to follow all year. I saw somebody suggest that maybe that's even a worse problem than the runners in scoring position thing, which, since that's evened out a bit, maybe that's true. And it's not the ballpark. I don't know what the hell's going on there. But yeah, so that maybe like lowers the bar a little bit, though. I think, yeah, obviously you would prefer to have somebody who looks more like the traditional slugger. It looks more like the Brandon Belt, even. Which is what Horwitz looks like. What could be the poor man's version of, maybe.
Yeah, but you would just, I think they're just going to be Belts kicking around. They're, you know, Belt might even be kicking around, although he's kind of indicated that maybe he won't be kicking around. But it doesn't seem like that hard an ask to say, oh, I'm going to go find a veteran guy who can play first base or not really play a ton of defense, hit left-handed, and, you know, slug 450.
It really doesn't. I mean, look at the numerous names ahead of Vlad on the first base leaderboard for WAR or for weighted runs created plus or whatever. There are types.
Yeah, and then the Clement of it is like he's got some wild numbers right now. You know, he's got the huge BABIP. He didn't strike out at all at AAA, which is impressive. He hit more home runs than he ever had before. Like, there's something going on with him. I don't know. The more I kind of dug into him and I wrote about him today, the more I felt less confident. Just because he swings at absolutely everything, and his ability to make contact with absolutely everything is super impressive. But then the comparables you end up getting are like the Willens Astudillo types, like the guys who are just cutting and making relatively weak contact all the time. And that seems like the most likely route for him. Like, he's been very valuable in the sense they've needed a person. He's stepped up and he's performed well. But when I think of the future, or even think of down the stretch when they have Bo Bichette back, you know, I'd rather have him on the bench than Mason McCoy against left-hander. Sure, throw him the odd start, but he's someone who doesn't feel as likely to play a role with the team going forward.
And that's going to be delightful when, though, I mean, nobody's standing him the way that they are David Schneider, obviously, for obvious and understandable reasons. But it's going to be fun when they can't find spots for these guys. And Chapman in particular comes back and hopefully doesn't suck the way he has for, you know, 4 of the 5 months of this year so far. But that sort of remains to be seen. A lot of salty folks out there, it turns out. They've watched a lot of frustration and failure this year.
Well, that's a big part of the story, right? Like, obviously, when players perform well and there's sort of an underdog story and there's novelty, like those, that invites people to jump aboard and be enthusiastic. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be by any means. Like, it has been very legitimately fun to see Schneider and to a lesser extent Clement, but he's come up with some big hits as well, even a little bit of Horwitz, although we've seen less of him. Like, it is a fun storyline, but I think that part of it is just people are so frustrated with the existing cast of characters, so annoyed with the constant, you know, underperformance in their view. Most of the time, that's fair. Like, Vlad has underperformed. Chapman has, like you said, for most of the season underperformed, even though the overall numbers are solid. Springer, a lot of times, underperformed. Like, the catchers, they're so sick of seeing these players that they're very familiar with not do quote unquote what they're supposed to do, and suddenly have these guys that are new and fresh, even if they're not as young, perhaps, as sometimes call-ups would be, overperforming by a significant margin. And it's just so refreshing as a comparison point that people have dove in perhaps more than they would have under other circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, man, cling to something that's positive about this team, because there hasn't been nearly enough of that. You know, and I don't want to preemptively get mad about what I think people are going, the way people are going to react to things, you know, down the line. But also, you know, don't go getting mad if they go another way. If they, like, I hope nobody is like, all right, well, you got your Brandon Belt replacement, you got your Espinal Biggio replacement, you got your Matt Chapman replacement, like, giddy up, and are potentially going to get mad if they go a different way in the off season and build in some more talent. That's a straw man, and I probably shouldn't have even brought it up, but it feels a bit like that at this point, because people are really, really on board with these guys, and yeah, they're the guys who've actually given them something to be on board about. I mean, I as much as I am reticent with, you know, any sort of like small sample run from guys who are, you know, who started the year at the back half of your top 10 in prospects, if that, if even on the 30, if, you know, coming into his third or fourth MLB organization, you know, there's reasons to be doubtful, but yeah, let's get a little hope, because it has not been a hopeful year. And even as they've sort of, you know, backed their way into succeeding lately, it hasn't really felt all that inspiring or hopeful either.
Yeah, I think the only guy that type of talk would arise with would be Davis Schneider, right? It would be,
and I think that's the fair one, right?
Yeah, I think that's the only one you could really have a conversation about. Like, the idea of like, oh, this guy's blocking Ernie Clement, like, that's absurd. I don't think anyone's gonna walk down that road. But if it was Davis Schneider, and it's like, oh, they went and got a truly uninspiring veteran second baseman, and there's no clear route to him having regular at bats. I think that's where you'd run into that debate. It could be interesting down the stretch, I think, this year as well, where, I don't know, say Chapman comes back and he's really struggling and he's putting some of these guys on the bench, and it gets to the point where people are like, they need to win this exact game, and therefore, you know, who cares about where Chapman has been and what he's done? You know, Ernie Clement's the guy hitting 400. You know, those type of conversations sometimes crop up. I tend to prefer to live and die with sort of quote unquote true talent. And so I've got a lot of patience for a Matt Chapman, but again, we don't need to preempt those discussions. You did mention that, like, lately they have seemed a little uninspired, despite the fact, you know, they've won these series, but they've won these series against poor teams and they haven't got the sweeps, which it seemed like they would potentially need the sweeps, you know, last time we talked. And yet, I think the whole discourse has been saved a little bit by our friends, the Texas Rangers. Because if the Rangers had just been plodding along kind of normally, the Blue Jays would still be out of a wild card spot as we record. And there would have been all this talk about the opportunities blown and how they didn't make up ground when this was their chance to do so. And I, you know, that's still true to an extent, and they may come to look back on the stretch and, you know, they really let one go in Colorado, for instance. They may come to see those games as really difficult ones, But the Rangers are 1-5 in their last six, outscored 58-14. And they've fallen behind Toronto. And now this series is, it's kind of hanging over the season. Not that it's guaranteed that this is going to be the whole thing. They might split it and go their separate ways and they'll have to sort it out later. But do you see Texas as like, okay, this is the one target that matters right now, and this series, therefore, is sort of the biggest thing? I know I've even seen, internet ad, like digital ads from the Toronto Blue Jays themselves kind of selling the importance of this series. I forget the exact wording, but I had a pop-up ad being like, this is the crucial series, blah, blah, blah. I forget what it was, even though that, the Royal Series is obviously coming up. So the fact it's even becoming a marketing point as well.
Oh, I think it absolutely is, a massive series, obviously. I think, the Mariners are maybe, due to fall back as more than they already have. And it's just, this is a bit tangential to, your question and your point, but like, what strikes me is like, is this what the expanded playoffs is always going to be like? It's just, you're watching just mediocre teams jockey for position for, these last playoff spots and do things that mediocre teams do, like what the Blue Jays have done with runners in scoring position, or the weird failures of the offense, or like the way the Rangers have collapsed. These were not teams. The Rangers were obviously not a team that was whose success was that durable. The Rays were the same way. And I mean, maybe that's just every team's mediocre by a certain standard, except for like the real, real good ones, except for the Braves or whatever. But like, it pains me to think of more years like this and where that's just sort of where you are, where Ross Atkins could go on the radio in August and be like, well, we're pretty much on pace for our projections, which, the objective ones out there were saying, 89, 88 wins. And it's like, well, that's not good enough. Like, that's just so not far enough over 500 to be anything but, a frustrating mess of a team. So that strikes me as we talk and think about that stuff. But I don't know that the series is a be-all, end-all because of that, though, too, right? They could split it, and the Yankees, what are they right now? The Rays are, I don't know if they have a division they'll be fighting for even by the time the Jays get to play them a bunch. We could see a lot still go on. We could see the Mariners falter. We could see the Astros falter. I think they're probably, I'll go and trust whatever the preseason projections were and then feel good about the Astros are better than, and they're maybe... they have issues of their own, maybe not as pronounced as the Rangers all getting hurt, and then Adolis Garcia went on the IL. We were talking off air about Cole Ragans, or whatever that you're supposed to pronounce that. The Royals pitcher who everybody's afraid of coming into the Rogers Center this weekend, who was with the Rangers until, just a couple months ago when he was traded for Aroldis Chapman. The Rangers, I don't know. It's just that there's a lot of mediocrity going on, and so it's hard to bet against anything. You got to bet on chaos and like in that sort of situation. So I don't know that it's that it matters. Just like this must win run hasn't necessarily mattered either.
Yeah, I think that if the Blue Jays were to sweep that series, or even go, I think either team going 3-1 could be fairly consequential. But yeah, a split is an easy outcome to foresee. You mentioned that mediocrity, right? Like, you can look at the National League and your team clinging to the third spot, like the equivalent Blue Jays are the Miami Marlins, who, as we record, have a run differential of minus 34. And, the next three teams fighting for that playoff spot behind them all have a negative run differential as well. And they have a winning percentage between 500 and 514. And it is odd. It's weird because you don't know when, people who are listening or people having the discussion, we've all kind of come to baseball at different times and we all have our own norms that we've established. And so, when we started watching baseball, it really was, it was the good teams that made the playoffs, like the really good teams, better than the Blue Jays are this year, better than the 2020, like a version of the 2023 Blue Jays that had less weird things happen to it offensively, maybe could be one of those like really properly good teams. But I think that's ingrained with us, the idea that making the playoffs means like you're a really good team, mission accomplished by the front office, like you're one of the elite squads in baseball. And as they've expanded this out, like, you can make an argument as to what's good for the game, right? Like, more people are engaged, right? We're having this conversation. I'm sure we're having a conversation if the Blue Jays were absolute dog shit as well. But, like, maybe more people are listening. More people are interested in the Blue Jays, even in sometimes a kind of toxic way in 2023, because all of this is within reasonable reach. Like, more fan bases, more teams involved. And so there's something good to be said about that, but it has changed the complexion of the sport. Like, it is now more like the NBA or the NHL, where making the playoffs is not a huge accomplishment necessarily in and of itself. And the difference in baseball is that the playoffs are so funky that one of these teams that's just not really much good can conceivably win. As we kind of say on the podcast all the time, the Blue Jays could still win the 2023 World Series. Like, that's a totally realistic thing to happen. Whereas in some of those other sports, like the NHL, like NBA, like NFL, those teams that sneak into the playoffs that aren't that good in the end, they almost never do anything. It's like, oh, you made the playoffs, that was your achievement for the year, here's your ribbon, now fuck off, like, the real teams are gonna play now. It's not like that in baseball. Like, the teams that sneak in can win it all potentially. And that's part of what makes this whole arrangement so weird now, is like, before we were only letting in that elite club. So it didn't, and again, I don't know if matter is the right term, but it didn't really seem odd if anyone won. And now we have created the scenario where, yeah, like, we could see some peculiar champions and we already saw it with that Braves team, to be honest. Like, you can see some really odd things happening, and I don't know. Like, I don't think it's fair for me to say if that's good or bad for the sport, because it's pretty damn subjective. Like, I don't know. I think it's cool that this many people are in the mix, but maybe I'll think it's less cool when the Miami Marlins win the World Series this year.
Well, it's what you said with, you know, what our expectations or our norms are, right? And I don't want to pretend like, I mean, there are definitely a lot of people in the traditionalist camp, or even not in that camp, you know, on a lot of things who are not for expanding the playoffs. It's been a thing here. I think it sort of always has been in the background, or at least since, you know, the mid 2010s or the mid 2000s, right? You know, that's what I come back to as we're talking about this, is thinking about like the 2008 Jays or the 6 Jays, whichever one was the really good one, the first Gibby one, where it was like, you know, they won 85 games or more than that, and we're just behind two teams that just they absolutely could not compete with in terms of spending. And now obviously the Rays have proven that that's not necessarily the barrier that it once was considered. But, you know, when you think about expanding the playoffs and how people for years have thought, you know, well, if they just had an extra playoff spot to fight for, the Jays would have had so many more successful seasons. You kind of, you know, you didn't think, or I didn't think until this season sort of drove it home, is that it also means that a lot of mediocre Blue Jays teams would have been in the fight. And it would have been hanging off every pitch of a lot of teams that were probably just as frustrating as this one, only not as noticeable because they were buried in the standings by July, right? So it's just my mind, and I think a lot of people's minds probably are not yet attuned to the new reality of how this all works. And I think that's fair, and it was to be expected, and it's also kind of understandable that we're maybe not coming to grips with it or haven't been yet. And just to look at this, it's just like these teams are exactly what you say. In an earlier era, we would have been like, these teams are dog shit. Clearly just not good enough, haven't shown enough, which people have been saying all year about these Blue Jays. It hasn't been true, and it still isn't true because of not necessarily anything they've been doing, but just the wide openness of the Rays.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about the Blue Jays teams, and I think the most obvious peer to that is sort of the, you know, the 2000 through 2010 type year, you know, the Roy Halladay years, right?
Yeah.
And they were often respectable, and maybe, you know, if these wild card spots have been open, they might have treated trade deadlines a little differently, things like that. And when you were watching those teams, because you knew they were out of the race, there was an element, I'm not saying that this is what fans want. I don't think fans want teams to not make the playoffs, But if you knew that Blue Jays team was just way behind, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the 2008 team was a great example because they had that amazing rotation with Halliday and Burnett and Markham and McGowan and Lich. And you were sort of enabled to pick and choose what you wanted to care about. Like, you like, this is the player that I love. I'm watching I'm watching Roy Halladay. I'm in love with watching this guy pitch. Or, you know, I'm a huge Vernon Wells fan and I'm just cheering for him to have a big day. And of course, I hope the Blue Jays win, but I know that doesn't really matter so much. So as a result, I can kind of zero in on the things that I love about the team and kind of soak up that enjoyment. And I think that that's probably a better feeling than people give it credit for, because we're so binary on the wins and losses and what's a success and what's a failure. But in terms of a fan experience, I think that can be a surprisingly good experience. And what they're dealing with now is sort of the inverse of that, where people are taking, I know the Buffalo boys are a little bit of an exception to this, but the idea of sort of taking time to pick and choose what you love about the team and really embrace the entertainment product and the thing you get emotionally attached to has sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit, because there's this desperate fight for survival that's going on 24/7. And so no one is sort of sitting back and being like, oh, it's a Kevin Gausman start today. That's great. I love watching Kevin Gausman pitch. Not no one, but the majority of people aren't feeling that way because there's this whole thing looming over it. And I'm not saying you want to trade one for the other, but it is interesting how the structure of MLB changing has had a profound effect on the experience of watching these games.
Absolutely. I don't know. As you're saying it, I'm like, oh, fright, shit. Yeah, it has. And even the Buffalo Boys thing, I mean, in a different context, which David Schneider's done, well, first he probably would have been up sooner or, you know, whatever, but doing the things that he's done would have been like a Brett Laurie kind of hope moment where, you know, and we've talked about this year before as well, like reflecting on the missed opportunities of previous years for the Blue Jays, where, you know, the hope is fleeting because you see the end of this thing coming. And we are that focused and obsessed on the standings, because it's so easy for them to look like contenders. It's so easy for every team to look like contenders. It's the reason why, you know, there aren't as many, you know, sellers at the trade deadline anymore, or why, you know, you see weird things like the Angels did. I mean, that's hopefully an exception, you know, releasing all their guys there at the end of August. But yeah, it's with this different context, you do still miss, I think, something even in something that's like that. I mean, like, that would be just such a great story, and it is, but it would be a great story unmoored from all of the hatred of everything else that's gone on with this offense this year.
Well, it'd be a great story without the part where he isn't in the lineup one day, and that's a huge fucking deal. You know what I mean? Like,
I would like that.
And yeah, like, everybody, I don't know, I guess, you know, he's younger, whatever, you don't have to worry so much load management, yada, yada, yada. But like, guys get cycled in and out of the lineup. Like, the fact that that was even sort of a mini news cycle, and I know that it's partly because it came up on the broadcast, and the broadcast, you know, is generally not in the business of kind of calling out the manager, except for the occasional in-game thing. But it just had a little bit of a different tone from, I think it was Jamie Campbell, which is kind of unusual. Maybe it was Caleb Joseph as well, that duo. And I'm not saying they're necessarily wrong. Like, it, you know, every game means a ton, and David Schneider is the guy who's absolutely going, and if he's healthy to do it, probably a good idea to have him in the lineup. But it is odd to see whether this guy, who no one thought was anything entering 2023, being out of the lineup for one day is a life or death thing. And I get why it sort of is, but it's just, you know, again, yeah, in another context, maybe he'd just kind of be hitting 75% of the time, and we'd be like, oh, wow, this is cool, this is happening.
Absolutely. And in another context, and this is something I wrote earlier in the week, in another context, the Jays might be a little less disinclined. That's I'm saying that backwards. They'd be more inclined to maybe let him get some run, as opposed to what I suspect is going on a little bit here is not give these guys too much too soon, not put too much on the shoulders of Spencer Horwitz and David Schneider to pick up this team full of MLB veterans at the end of the year, who are fighting for a playoff spot and fighting for that thing that they've, you know, that they've been doing for, in some cases, the better part of a decade. you know, there is something, I think, to the notion that maybe it would be a little too much too soon to start throwing. I mean, he's in the middle of the order a lot, or even at the top, but like putting that expectation on a guy right away, I can understand if that was the rationale, and I don't know that it is, but if that was the rationale, there's something to that too, right? Like, that's putting a lot on these guys. And again, in that other context, I'm not pining for a season where the Blue Jays were out of contention by now. But you know, the grass is sometimes greener, and thinking about it through this lens, it does look a little greener in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say, and we're about half an hour in here, that the plan for today's podcast was not to get nostalgic about the Blue Jays that never really did anything competitively. but I'm happy we went down that road. I do want to talk about some of the starters today, because there's a lot going on in this rotation right now. And one of the biggest things is Chris Bassitt, who has had two huge outings in a row. We've sort of seen this year, where he seemed to have his stretches where he's really firing on all cylinders, and then he had a bit of a bumpy stretch there now, but after these two outings, you know, the numbers are all kind of lined up again. What is the confidence level on Bassitt? Do you think, because I think there, most of the time this season we've talked about it, it seems like the idea has been that, you know, with Manoa not having the season that people expected, that Berríos is sort of the de facto number two and Bassitt is the three. And again, you know, that type of labeling doesn't always matter that much, but also they are potentially on the road to a three-game playoff series, so it could end up mattering a lot. Do you see Bassitt as the number two right now, with Berríos being a little bit shakier and him coming on?
I think it's entirely possible. I mean, I think that the Blue Jays are in a position where they can ride the hot hand. And yeah, I mean, like a month ago, it was like, oh, is Kikuchi going to be the number? Like, he was going so well. And that's been a little shaky, you know. And I think, you know, as opposed to some of his recent lineup construction, I think John Schneider, when the playoffs come, ought to be kind of riding the hot hand, you know, outside of Gausman, who obviously is the guy who's kind of got you here. You know, Berríos has had a really good year. You know, the numbers, you look at it, it looks like, you know, the guy that you paid for, which is incredible considering last year, obviously. You know, it depends on who the opponent is, I think, too. And there's going to be those sorts of considerations. But you're doing okay either way. You're not like, it's not like your ace and your 1A, you know, following Kevin Gausman. But yeah, I think Bassitt has obviously put himself in the conversation to move up that slot, and good on him, right? Like, I don't know. There's no shame in being third, Jose Berríos. I don't think that's going to be the issue, and let's just hope it's a question we have to answer in a few weeks.
Yeah, I think Berríos can easily be a three with what you're paying him, like a good three. Again, those numbers don't really matter until they do. Bassitt's season is interesting because, you know, speaking of how we would have perceived things differently in the past, he's having that year that, I don't know, 15 years ago, people would be talking about pretty differently, right? Like, he is leading the American League in wins. He might be tied at this point, but he's got 14. He is sixth in the major leagues in innings pitched as we record. He actually leads the American League in batters faced. I know that's not like a real stat that people care about, but the quantity is there. His ERA is 3.69, which is up slightly from what he did last year, but kind of in the ballpark despite more difficult circumstances. And yeah, he had a stat go up the other day about his eight inning starts, giving up certain amounts of runs, as the only person since Roger Clemens to do it with the Blue Jays. And people don't think about him that way, and I don't think he deserves to be thought of as, you know, an ace or anything. You know, he just doesn't strike out enough guys for that, and the home runs are a bit of a worry in certain parts with him because of the fly ball rate and their splits. Like, you can pick apart his performance, and I think people do now, and I'm not going to say I'm not among those people, but it is odd that when you kind of zoom out and look at it with, yeah, 2005 brain or whatever, it is a heck of a year.
No, it really is. It really, really is. And, you know, I'll have to switch back on my 2005 brain. It's been dusty at this point. But yeah, even though those aren't the markers that we use, you still can't take anything away from how good he has been. Not the consistent is maybe not the word I would use because of some of those ups and downs, but when he's been good, he's been real, real good. And you know, as maligned as the front office gets for just about everything, and you know, and fairly so in terms of like handing out free agent contracts to pitchers or handing out big money to pitchers, if we were talking a year ago, they're doing pretty all right with these the front four they've got, and even the fifth one right now. Like those are all, you know, Berríos was obviously acquired via trade, but they extended him. They've hit on some guys, so kudos to them, I suppose, as well. Maybe grow some, find some homegrown pitching. And
yeah, I was gonna say, part of that is because they've had to do that. But.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I think you know, there are several people who you could say, you know, the Blue Jays aren't where they are without this guy, and Bassett is real high up that list. Vlad's at the bottom of that list, unless you mean it in the negative sense, in which case maybe he's at the top of that list. But yeah, no, it's been a really great year for him, and it bodes well, because there's definitely times where, you know, the wheels start to feel like they're coming off. The velocity isn't real overpowering, obviously. The age is getting up there, a lot of innings on that arm, and you wonder about the back end of that contract, and it would be very nice, you know, whatever happens with, you know, his teammates and their ability to hit enough to get this team into the playoffs. It's nice to feel, you know, going into next season that that drop off isn't ready to happen just yet.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned sort of the development issue. If Manoa ends up being broken, like, remember how he was always the one who's like, wow, they can't develop pitching. Well, come on, guys. They did get Manoa. And so if that doesn't work out, line, I'm not saying that it won't, but it is the big counterexample has been a little bit nullified this year. And the big counterexample himself, which would be a terrible nickname for him, by the way, had a little bit of, I don't know, intrigue might be overstating it, but a little bit of a news blip this week where he's put on the temporary inactive list at AAA. It seemed to be sort of a procedural move to free up a roster spot because he's not seemingly ready to start. He's building up. Things are getting a little bit murky here in terms of if we're going to see him again in 2023. And I guess what I find myself wondering is, does that matter? Like, is there an upside to him getting, I don't know, 2-3 good starts at AAA at the end here? Or if it sort of putters out and he never builds back up or whatever, is that sort of fine?
I think that, I don't know that there's really a choice at this point almost, right? I mean, he could get in some innings still, sure, but the longer he is not off a mound, the longer it's going to take for him to back up and the less time there's remaining in the season. I don't think the AAA season ends on like the 25th or 6th or something like that. So we're talking like 3 weeks. And you know, how many outings can he get in even at this point? So I kind of assume that his year's probably done, which is weird, which is understandable given how ridiculous it was. But less understandable given how we don't know anything that's going on. If it's more personal or whatever, you know, we don't necessarily have to know that stuff, but it's definitely unusual. You know, this is a guy who got Cy Young votes last year, as everybody knows, opening day starter. You know, this is, the things in his employment have become, newsworthy and worthy of attention from fans, and that's sort of part of the gig, so that there is this murk surrounding it all. Is a bit weird, which is not in any way, you know, demanding that the team reveal what's going on, and you know, you kind of have to take it on faith that they have his best interest in heart at heart. It would be real nice if more people weren't like, they're screwing him up, this has been this is ridiculous, I don't know what they're doing, like, you know, and yeah, if they're doing the worst case you can think of based on what little we know, then maybe they haven't handled him well. I don't know that we know the whole story there enough to make those judgments, but yeah, it's at this point, whether it's worth it or not, it seems immaterial, irrelevant. It's I doubt he could even do it.
Yeah, I kind of assume that he's done at this point. As you said, there's not much time left. The sort of issue that was relevant earlier in this process was the idea that Manoah was potentially your sixth starter. So if something happened to somebody, there really wasn't a good option for the Blue Jays, although Mitch White's back in the organization. So no, but like there, that was sort of the thing. Like they really didn't have rotation depth. And to be honest, the Blue Jays have been very lucky with the health of their starters this season, because if they had had a couple of guys go down at any given point, they could have been in serious trouble here. They just really didn't. And that depth is hard to find, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, when you develop a little pitching, sometimes you have guys at AAA who could handle a start or two and help you deal with a minor injury to somebody. They don't really have that. And so Manoah, in theory, could have been that level of insurance, a very weird level, to be honest. But he was potentially their best option because he could sort of survive in a way that we weren't necessarily confident other guys could. And then the ship has really sailed on that. But at this point, you've got the expanded roster. You have an extra pitcher there. You have Francis in the bullpen. I think you just don't really worry about that. I know that there's some talk that, you know, Trevor Richards has maybe been overused in these long stints. You would just be able to figure it out now with the expanded roster in a way that's, you know, a lot easier. You still have guys at AAA in the bullpen that are usable. You could shuffle some people around. So I just don't see it as a big deal if he's not available for any of that, which seems to be pretty clear that he's not. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure next year there will be plenty of discussions about what Manoah needs to do, what he's done, how he's changing in the offseason, what he's figured out, what he hasn't. And it's too early to know any of that. There's just so much we do not know about Alek Manoah's 2024, unfortunately.
Yeah, we need the before and after photos.
Oh,
which,
yeah,
I'm sure people are going to be going over like the Zapruder film. The other thing, though, is like, I mean, at this point, like if Ryu had gone down and last night, or whenever the hell he last pitched, I don't know. Well, you're going to throw Manoah into the Rangers series now? Like, that kind of wouldn't be fair to him. And I assume, you know, any of the series beyond that are also a little bit too much to ask for a guy who has, you know, had the season that he's had and had the break that he's had to come back. So, you know, maybe getting him to some innings, maybe just finishing up strong in AAA, you know, I could completely understand that. I could understand them going the other way. But, yeah, I don't see it at the major league level this year.
Before we get out of here, I did want to touch on Ryu a little bit because...
Was it yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Yeah, okay.
Wednesday for our future listeners. Because I think that on this podcast, and I would say I'd been the driving force of it, there's been general sort of skepticism and cynicism in terms of Ryu. Part of that is the velocity is never... bounced back, and it's not like we have a huge sample here. We've got 7 starts, but it's getting to the point where I think you gotta kind of potentially respect what Ryu's doing at this point. You know, he's got a 2.65 ERA, expected ERA of 3.42. His you know, some of his numbers, his exit velocity is the same as it was in 2020 on average basis. The expected wOBA on contact 3.45, which it was 3.41 that year. I mentioned 2020 because that's like the good Ryu that Blue Jays fans remember. And he's got this crazy super slow curveball that's getting a lot of whiffs all of a sudden. And it's early to be like, I'm really buying in on this. But at the same time, you know, we're looking at 7 games here, 7 starts. And I think it's pretty fair to say he's exceeded expectations by a pretty decent chunk here.
Oh, absolutely. I remember at the start of the year being like, you know, poo-pooing the idea that he would even be able to contribute in a non-meaningful way. And here he is being, you know, a really important part of the roster down the stretch as they fight for a playoff spot. Another story to go back to what we said before where, you know, had there been fewer playoff spots to compete for, we would really be appreciating this, I think, a little bit more. Because, yeah, no, I mean, with every start, I kind of have to reaffirm my belief. I don't know that I necessarily, it's a lot because of the velocity. It's just going to take some time to build up that trust again. But just watching him pitch healthy reminds you of how great he was when he was pitching healthy before, and also sort of indicates probably how long he was pitching unhealthy and trying to make a go of it before he ultimately succumbed to Dr. Keith Meister or whoever the hell it was that did the Tommy John.
Yeah, and there's some mitigating factors here, right? He's never gone above five innings in a start, so they're sort of perceiving him as a two times to the order guy. Maybe not 100% strictly, but essentially that's what you're getting out of him. And opponents matter too, right? He started against Baltimore. That was the first start. That was the most difficult one. And since then, it's been Cleveland, Cubs, Reds, Cleveland again, Colorado, and Oakland. So not the most difficult run of lineups you could conceivably face. Cleveland also
several playoff contenders, I'll have you know.
Cleveland also being, you know, a relatively respectable team in a sense, maybe that's even that is an overstatement. But being like a real-ish team, but also one that's notoriously bad against left-handed pitching, like things have lined up for him in a really beneficial way. And when you watch him pitch right now, you know, there are some great moments. The curveball is really cool. Sometimes he does spot the changeup. And the contact against him is undoubtedly soft, but that's the type of thing that's really hard to gauge over the small sample. Like how much is he inducing soft contact and how much are people just not hitting the ball hard because they kind of suck? It's tough. Like that's tough to parse over seven starts. Like it just really is. And
for some Blue Jays hitters, it's been tough to parse over 5 months.
Yeah, exactly. And so it wouldn't shock me if, you know, and Ryu's going to pitch in this Rangers series. Like, it wouldn't shock me if at some point there's a really ugly moment here. But as you said, kind of using that brain of let's appreciate a good baseball story and something that's fun to watch. This has been a better story than I possibly could have envisioned. And he has been fun to watch. It hasn't just been a slog watching his starts as well. So something to appreciate, perhaps, even if it's a little difficult to have confidence in.
Yo, we couldn't agree more. Yeah, one of my favorite Blue Jays pitchers to have watched with this level of intensity over the course of my life. You know, not way, way up there, but just a guy I have a lot of time for watching pitch.
All right, we will leave it there. And the next time we talk to all you guys, it will be at the very least into that Ranger series, perhaps at the conclusion of it, and we will know a lot more about where the Blue Jays stand. And we, as always, we appreciate you guys tuning in, leaving ratings and reviews, and that kind of algorithm boosting stuff is always nice, and we look forward to talking to you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcasts. anyone invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com